Suicide is one of the hardest things to talk about. Families avoid the word, friends look away, even professionals can hesitate. And yet this silence, it doesn't protect us. It makes the pain lonelier. When I run training like mental health first aid, the room always changes during this section on suicide. People stop speaking, some look down, others shift in their seats. Some have a personal experience with loss, and so they might choose not to be part of that conversation. That pause says everything about how unprepared and awkward and uncomfortable most of us feel. Even in supervision with experienced clinicians and therapists, the word suicide, it carries weight, and that can be really hard to hold. And the silence itself tells us how frightening and overwhelming this topic is. Today is Are You Okay Day, and I wanted to take this opportunity to talk a little bit about suicide. Yesterday was World Suicide Prevention Day, and so having those 2 days close together, I'm sure was intentional. And so if this is a distressing topic for you, perhaps this is an episode that you skip over. Now, I love events or calendar dates or promotional things that encourage us to talk about difficult topics. I mean, here I am now even talking about it, and I like that. I think that's really great. But we need more than yellow cupcakes and barbecues. And we need to equip ourselves with some of the skills to have tough conversations, sit with people's distress, demystify and debunk some myths around these things. And that's what I'm hoping to do today. I did do an episode, a very personal episode actually. It was a conversation with Bronwyn Milkins from the Mental Works podcast about the therapist experience when you lose someone to suicide. So if you want to check that out, I'll pop a link to that in the show notes. That was on the Inside Social Work podcast and it came out earlier this year. And that was a very difficult conversation to have. It was something we thought about for a long time and whether or not we talk about it openly. And we chose to share our experiences with other people. So you might be curious to know what happens behind the scenes. You can check that out. So why is it so hard to talk about this? One of the things I see is actually people being scared to say the wrong thing. And the language has evolved and has changed. So we avoid saying things like committed suicide or a successful or unsuccessful attempt. We want to use words that don't have judgment, and commit comes from a time when it was actually a crime and it can hold some really negative connotations. So we say suicided or died by suicide, fatal or non-fatal. We don't say a successful or unsuccessful attempt, because if you say successful, I mean, if you think about it, it doesn't really have a good implication. And unsuccessful sort of could imply that that's what you were hoping the person would do, or, you know, they were unsuccessful, so they should try again. So we don't want to say any of those things, die by suicide or suicided. When someone is struggling and they're expressing desire to end their life, I think a lot of people clam up. They don't know what to say. They're worried that if they ask about it, it might put the idea in someone's head. And there's some stigma and taboo from a number of places, from religion, from culture, from history. And some people can actually carry a lot of shame and even avoid using the word. And then there's comments like suicidal, people who are suicidal or attention seeking, or they're being dramatic. And yet when someone dies by suicide, I hear things like, I wish they reached out. Why didn't they say anything? And so we have this really difficult context in which we're talking about this stuff. And this is hard. This is really, really hard. And if you want to upskill yourself, I highly recommend doing some additional training. There are a number of different trainings available to have difficult conversations around suicide. But I want to talk a little bit more about what it's like to start talking about it, some of the impact and the grief and the ripple effect. And the ripple effect seems to have a very different impact to when someone dies by other means. I don't entirely understand the research behind it. I'm sure there is some. I haven't deep dived into that. I think it is because of the shock, maybe a fear of, did I miss something? Could I have done something? A sense of maybe responsibility. I think there's a different experience for those who are connected to that person. Suicide really reshapes the lives of everyone connected to that person. And I think sometimes we can overlook providing support to those people. So you know someone who has experienced a loss in their life, that someone they know has died by suicide, they might need some additional support. And this can be a really tricky thing to navigate, and they don't have to do it alone. I think families live with questions that might never be answered. I see this it comes across my therapy couch, people blaming themselves or blaming each other, feeling there's always a sense of, should I have known? Could I have done something different? What did they mean by that? Maybe replaying past interactions with that person in their head, trying to go over old text messages or correspondence and really trying to figure out what went wrong, feeling guilt and regret are common experiences that I've seen in the people that I've worked with. When there's children or partners involved, they can experience huge feelings of abandonment, anger, and rejection that can linger in later relationships. Children in particular, they carry a lot of fear and shame and confusion, and with their sense of safety permanently altered. And I work with people who are adults still navigating the loss of a parent to suicide, and it is a loss that they will forever be navigating. The grief doesn't go away, and they're continuing to try to piece things together and understand that loss. There are a lot of feelings of abandonment, and kids in particular, the world view that they have is about them. And often they might think, it's because of me, I must have done something wrong. And so there can be a lot of things happening there. And like I mentioned earlier, that's not a thing you have to deal with alone. So please, if that's you, find some support. Communities, in particular schools, can have a lot of shock, and they can carry that for years as well. It can really impact an entire community, a workplace, a sports club, some other social event or gathering club. And so it really does have a huge community impact. And there are programs out there, especially for schools, they're called suicide postvention plans, and they are really great resources to use and to have put in place just with all the other emergency OHS, fire evacuation procedures, all those things, to have a plan in place in the unfortunate event that there is a suicide in the community. You have something in place to respond. Now, grief's something I've spoken about a lot on the podcast. I do want to spend a bit of time on this, maybe in upcoming episodes. The grief in particular and suicide, it's really complicated, and it is layered with guilt, shame, or can be layered with guilt, shame, anger, and sadness. It's not linear, and it's not about closure. And there'll be moments throughout a year, anniversaries or birthdays or other reminders that bring that pain back instantly. It can just happen all of a sudden. Or one thing I've seen in some people recently is they start to feel a little prickly or oversensitive, and then they realize, oh, it's because this particular day of the year is approaching, and they weren't really aware of it. And so our body can sometimes be signaling to us something's not okay, or we're experiencing a more intense period of grief and might not even have consciously made sense of that yet. And people over time can learn to carry that pain differently, but I don't think it ever really heals completely. It doesn't go away. Our world and our experiences can grow around that. And grief is a really painful emotion, and we can try and numb it and avoid it. And we don't tend to deal with it very well in our community anyway. We don't tend to talk very openly and honestly about loss and death and grief and pain, regardless of how someone died. And I think suicide carries that extra bit of shame and that extra bit of pain and guilt and confusion for people. I'll spend just a moment talking about the impact on practitioners. If you want to hear a little bit more about that, you can check out the other episode that I mentioned. I can tell you that sitting with suicidal clients is confronting and emotionally heavy, and in supervision. So as therapists, we have supervision with more experienced team members or external supervisors that help us discuss difficult cases or expand our skills. And it's part of our registration. We need to have it. So it doesn't mean we've done something wrong when we're in supervision. It's actually a built-in part of our practice. And when suicide comes, it is one of the most difficult topics to explore. There is a lot of hypervigilance, a lot of fear. People, if they have had someone on their caseload or someone that they work with die by suicide, that can be profound. There can be so much guilt and self-doubt and fear of failure and confusion. And should I have done something different? Could I have picked this up? Do I need to have a more thorough risk assessment? There's all of these things that can come up for people, and it requires a lot of support. It requires a whole team and can require a lot of self-care and navigating that. And some jobs have a higher risk of that happening if they're in those pointy end acute mental health service. That might be a higher occurrence there. And so certain industries are going to be exposed to this as a workplace hazard, and it's really hard. It's a really difficult place to be in. And so what do we do? If we suspect someone is suicidal, what do we say? What do we do? There seems to be a lot of myths. I'm not sure where it came from. I haven't actually understood this. I've been a mental health first aid instructor now for close to 10 years and really embedded that curriculum in my brain. So I haven't actually got a living memory of thinking this way, but it comes up in the course. It's something that we talk about. And there seems to be a myth that asking about suicide will put the idea into someone's head. However, research shows asking someone can actually relieve the pressure. And we want to ask in a very clear way. Now, our tone makes such a difference here. If we're all awkward and like, are you having thoughts of suicide? That tone implies discomfort and they're probably not going to share openly. If you say it with a hint that you want the answer to be no, something like, you're not thinking of doing something like suicide, are you? You're not thinking of doing something stupid. Firstly, that's insulting. What's something stupid? Because how are they going to just turn around and say yes? No, they're not going to. And it implies you want the answer to be a no because you're super uncomfortable with it. And so we want to ask in a very clear, non-judgmental way. And if you need more support, this is just a brief tip. Please get some training or a mental health first aid course. There is a program just on conversation about suicide. There is the Lifeline, I think, assist training, the storm training. There's a whole heap of trainings for different contexts helping you have these conversations. I just want to bust a few of the myths and keep in with the theme of this week with Suicide Prevention Day and Are You Okay Day. Now, there's another myth that only people with mental illness die by suicide, and that does put someone at an increased risk. And so do events like trauma, stress, loss, shame, and hopelessness can all play a role as well. So it's not just a diagnosable mental illness. There are a number of situational factors or pressures that can lead to suicide. One of them, and this is a tricky one, that suicide always happens suddenly. It's not always sudden. And often there are signs if people know how to notice them. But that doesn't mean that if you didn't notice, you stuffed up, you got it wrong. It's a very nuanced conversation. It's a very difficult conversation and every situation is so different. So sometimes there are signs, there are these little moments along the way that can indicate that someone is feeling hopeless, helpless, and having those thoughts. And I recommend learning a little bit more about it and getting some support if you want to have that conversation and you don't know exactly how to do it. Another myth that I want to bust, and I mentioned this briefly earlier about talking about suicide being seen as attention seeking. Often what people are wanting is connection. And this is a really interesting bit. I was reading someone's post of they had a lived experience of a non-fatal suicide attempt. And they were saying people were commenting to them following that she's just attention seeking, that she's being dramatic. And the interesting thing was when someone does start by suicide, there are those conversations around, I wish they said something. I wish they reached out. If I'd known things were so tough for them, I would have reached out more. I would have done this. And yet sometimes when people do those very things, we ignore them or we think they're being dramatic or overreacting. And so maybe this is a bit of a wake-up call for all of us to really check in with people. And if people are struggling, to step up, to connect with them, to just be there. For a lot of times, a lot of the people that I've worked with, they want connection and they want someone to hold space for them, not to jump in and try and problem solve, not to take the pain away, not to be overly positive and saying, oh, you've got so much to live for and everything's going to be amazing, to really hold space for their pain. And I know that can be really hard. And I encourage you to find the right tools that work for you so you can sit in that, so you can be that awesome friend, partner, parent, whatever it is, whatever relationship you have. I think we could all improve how we do relationships and how we show up for people who are struggling. Now, language matters. I mentioned a little bit about it before, but we want to avoid things like committed suicide. Yes, it makes it sound like a crime. We want to avoid saying something like a successful suicide or failed attempt. They're often quite harmful phrases. Simple language, died by suicide or suicided. It's clear and less stigmatizing. So for those who have lost someone, the grief can feel so isolating. And when people avoid talking about the suicide, it can make it worse. We want to tread lightly. Acknowledging the loss openly is important, and being careful not to use judgmental language. Make space for feelings that might seem like they don't belong. Anger, shame, guilt can come along with sadness and grief. So allowing space for that can help people feel seen and less alone. Please do not pretend that it didn't happen. This really deepens the wound. And so as we wrap up, I want to end on a couple of points that suicide can actually affect anyone, regardless of age, gender, culture, income. It can happen to anyone, anywhere. And prevention isn't only the role of professionals. Families, friends, workplaces, and communities can really play a role. Connection is so protective. Real conversations, genuine check-ins, and small acts of care can really save lives. I know that talking about suicide is always awkward and can be really difficult, but silence is far more dangerous. So if you're concerned, ask someone clearly, listen with care, because this can really save lives. And if you're experiencing these thoughts yourself, you don't have to carry them alone. Please seek out support. I'll list some numbers in the show notes. You can start with your GP. There are crisis lines that you can call. You don't have to be in this alone.